It's been a long time. Been a long time. Been a long, lonely, 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 lonely time.
Some things are better when they rock. Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos. Play 24-7 with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pool, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Been a long time since you rock and rolled? Visit us in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida, or online at SeminoleHardRock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time now for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I've got a very special episode for you today, as I'll be joined by Colin Blundstone, lead singer of The Zombies. The original band broke up as the 60s ended, have since reformed with Colin and Rod Argent, and sometimes also the lineup includes original members Chris White and Hugh Grundy. Back when they first disbanded, though, Colin embarked on a solo career, and his first several albums were actually produced by his former bandmates Rod and Chris. The first of these is called One Year, and it's celebrating its 50-year anniversary with a reissue on Sundays Records. We'll hear some of the opening track, She Loves the Way They Love Her, and then I'll be back with Colin Blundstone for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
She stands by the lights at the foot of the audience, smile on her face, just taking in every glance. She loves the way they love her. She loves the way. And she smiles, she loves every sweet talking lie.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and I am very honored indeed today to be speaking with Colin Blundstone on our Coolest Conversations. He's best known for being the lead singer of The Zombies, but also as a solo artist, and his debut solo outing, One Year, is celebrating its 50th anniversary with a reissue on Sundays Records. That's due out November the 19th. How are you, Colin?
I'm fine, Manfred. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. You know, we've had a kind of a rough couple of years going on here now. Have you and yours been able to stay safe and healthy over the course of the pandemic?
For the most part, yes. It's just been a matter of just staying at home. And, you know, I know you like to tour and I like to tour as well. And it just hasn't been possible. That's been the worst thing on a personal level, that I haven't really been able to work. It's just been concentrating on writing and recording. And there's been quite a lot of that going on. So that's kept me sane. That's kept me sane.
Well, good. Wasn't there something recently that you guys, as The Zombies, had done, maybe at Abbey Road, some type of streaming performance?
Oh, yes. We did a live stream from Studio 2, Abbey Road, which is the studio that the Beatles used almost all the time. So that was great. You know, we used to work there when we were younger. We did our last album, Odyssey and Oracle, in Abbey Road. And I recorded my first three solo albums in Abbey Road. And I've also recorded quite a lot with the Alan Parsons Project in Abbey Road. So it was great to be back there. It has got a unique feel about it. There's an incredible atmosphere, probably because of the history of Abbey Road. Just so many great records have come out of that building, and so it was really interesting and exciting to be back there, and of course to meet up with all the guys, all the Zombies. I think we played for about an hour and a half, and we hadn't played for 18 months, so that was quite an experience.
So when you've gone back to Abbey Road, are there any individuals that are still working there that you sort of run into in a hall and sort of catch up with?
Do you know, I don't think there was. Mm. I didn't see anyone there. Also, the inside the building had changed a lot as well. Studio 3, when we recorded Odyssey and Oracle in 1967, mm-hmm. It's been totally rebuilt. The all the machines are down the other end of the room. There's a balcony. I think there are rooms up in the balcony. None of that was there. It's a lot more sophisticated, I think, now than it was when I spent most of my time there. It's changed out of all recognition. And I think that all the people I knew, as far as I could gather, all the people that I knew have moved on.
Well, you mentioned recording your solo albums there as well, the first three, and we're talking about 1 year today. And I said it's celebrating 50-year anniversary, coming out on Sundays, originally issued back in 1971. Can you take us back to that time and remind us what was going on with the Zombies just prior to that, and why you decided to record the album as a solo artist, to do a solo
Absolutely.
Album?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Zombies had just run out of steam. You know, we thought that we were being really unsuccessful, and it was only afterwards. I have to remember, there was no internet in those days, so we didn't know what was going on the other side of the world. And we realized afterwards that we always had a hit record somewhere, but we thought we'd come to the end of the road. So we'd finished, and I went through two or three different little adventures before I was driving home from a party with Chris White, the original bass player in the Zombies. And he said to me, he and Rod Argent, the keyboard player in the Zombies, had set up a production company. And he just casually mentioned, why don't you come to our production company and we'd like to record an album with you. And it just seemed like a fantastic opportunity to get the old team back together again. So it was Rod Argent, Chris White producing. Eventually in Abbey Road, we actually started off in another studio called Sound Technique for sort of 1.5 tracks. And then we arrived at our recording home, Abbey Road, and Peter Vince was the recording engineer who had recorded most of Odyssey and Oracle. So it really was the old team, Studio 3, Peter Vince, Rod, Chris, and myself. And it felt very natural and it was a very relaxed album to record. Great fun.
Well, speaking of the team here, the old team, the track we heard before we started speaking was She Loves the Way They Love Her, opening cut to the album, and one of three songs on there that was recorded originally by the Zombies, the others being, I believe, Smokey Day and Her Song. Do I have that right? I think those were the three.
Well, it was, there was a kind of an in-between time when the Zombies finished. We didn't know we were going to have a huge hit with Time of the Season, which happened a year or so later, and there were many unfinished tracks that sort of got finished by, you could say, the Zombies, but it was Zombies and Friends, you know. It wasn't exactly the lineup that had been in the Zombies. I think Smokey Day was more or less Argent, maybe with Chris White singing. She Loves the Way They Love Her was Argent. I'm not sure that Her Song, I haven't heard that recorded before, but I think it was offered to Argent. Chris White would often offer his songs first to Argent and then to me, but Argent were determined to be seen as a rock band, and they were a phenomenal band. One of my favorite bands of all time. And I went to some of their early rehearsals and they were just incredible. And they were determined to be seen as a rock band. So they would shy away from the more of the ballad area of what everyone was writing. I mean, everyone writes ballads, but they tried to shy away from that area. And that was my good fortune, because I got songs that perhaps I wouldn't have had the opportunity to sing if they decided to do, you know, more ballads in their repertoire.
You know, what's interesting for me personally is that the first Zombies record I got was this compilation. In fact, I have it in my hand here. It's Time of the Zombies that came out in the early 70s. I didn't pick it up until the early 80s. But two of the songs, She Loves the Way They Love Her, and Smokey Day, are both on there. And, you know, so it was funny to me is that my perception of the band is that that was always part kind of in the repertoire, and those weren't songs that hadn't come out or previously. So your versions of those songs were the first time they had been released. Is that right?
It could well be. It's such a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to remember. And I get very confused because the Zombies actually only ever made two albums.
Yeah.
The first one, it certainly in the UK, was called Begin Here. And the second one was called Odyssey and Oracle. But somewhere along the line, and it's very little to do with us, this, but I think the A-sides have been an album. Mm-hmm. I think the B-sides have been an album, you know, and there's, Christmas specials and some of this and what have you. So I think there may be 20-something albums, but they're just tracks rearranged in a different order.
Right.
And they're not sort of exclusive albums. There were only two albums. So I must admit, especially as it's such a long time ago, I was never on top of all those releases anyway, because I wasn't involved in them. But I do get a little bit confused. But going back to what we were saying, I think that it's roughly a virgin version of Argent doing She Loves the Way They Love Her, right, and Smoky Day. I'm not sure who sang it. It would be either Rod or Chris. But I think her song definitely... I was the first one to record that.
So the production team, Mr. Arjun, Mr. White, they're responsible for far and away most of the Zombie songbook. But you did contribute as well, my favorite being Just Out of Reach. On One Year, you feature four of your own compositions. Was it difficult being in a band with not one but two gifted songwriters and wanting to write things yourself? Or when you were in the Zombies, was there... did you have much of a drive to try and get your own songs released?
Well, I was only just starting out as a songwriter. So from memory, I think I'd only written two songs. I mean, it took me a long time to be able to write, you know, half a dozen songs. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed and excited for Rod and Chris when they started to write. I had no idea they could write songs. And I'd known them for some time before they started writing songs. And it was a wonderful surprise to me that they came up with, Rod wrote She's Not There and Chris wrote the B-side, You Make Me Feel Good, but both fabulous songs. And as I watched them develop as writers, I thought, you know, I would really like to be able to do that. But you can't just one day be a non-writer and the next day say, well, I'm a songwriter. You've got to learn your craft.
Yeah.
And I think I only ever completed two songs whilst the original Zombies were together. And they were Just Out of Reach, which was written for a film, Bunny Lake is Missing. And another song was called How We Were Before. That was the first song I ever wrote, How We Were Before. And then after the Zombies, I kept trying to write so that when One Year came around in 1971, I had actually got a backlog of songs. And with this package, with this re-release of One Year, they've included 14 demos as a second CD. And many of those songs were never released. They were never even developed into real songs. They're kind of song ideas almost rather than demos. And they need to be worked on. But it just gives some idea of where I was up to in my career as a writer, really. These are the ideas that I was working on at the time of One Year.
Well, speaking of those demos, I wanted to ask you, some of the songs, you know, you wound up doing on One Year proper studio recording, so you can hear, yes, how those are kind of fleshed out. But did any of the others wind up on subsequent solo albums?
Yeah, there's a track on there called I've Always Had You, and that went on my second album, which was called Ennismore. But otherwise, there's seven or eight songs on there that were never, they were just recorded as very vague demos, as you can hear on this second CD, and they were just forgotten. And they were only discovered by chance. Chris White's two sons, Matthew and Jamie, were going through old tapes of Chris's. They've been trying to catalog, Chris has written many, many songs and produced many albums too. And they were just trying to get all his work in some kind of order. And they found two or three reel-to-reel tapes of my demos. I'd forgotten about them completely. And it was just decided when the record company heard them that it would be great to let people hear what was going on. And some of those songs, when I first heard them, I certainly didn't remember the sessions. Remembering this is 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I didn't remember the sessions, but some of them, I didn't remember the songs. when I'd heard them two or three times, I thought, oh yeah, now I remember that. But it was a very strange feeling. I knew it was me singing, and I could hear from my guitar playing, it was me playing guitar. but I didn't remember the song ideas at all until I'd heard them two or three times. So I hope people enjoy listening to these sort of rough ideas. I really do.
Well, I certainly did. And there's one that I want to ask you about because it's referenced something that had happened to you around that time. It's called Sing Your Own Song. And that was referring to an article in Rolling Stone that had reported that you had passed on. So what a weird thing. What was going on there?
Well, there were three zombie bands traveling around America. The thing was that Time of the Season had been a huge hit and there was no band. We'd finished, I think, about 18 months before. And so there was a vacuum, and the music business hates a vacuum. So they filled it with at least three phony zombie bands who were going out and touring. And Chris White happened to be in New York, and he was in the offices of Rolling Stone. And they said, well, we've got the phone number of the manager of one of these zombie bands, and we'd like you to call him and have him explain what's going on. And so Chris called him, and the manager thought he was talking to a journalist from Rolling Stone. And he said, well, we want to honor the life of the Zombies lead singer. We're huge fans of the Zombies lead singer, or the Zombies. And we want to honor the life of the lead singer of the Zombies, who was tragically killed in a car crash. And Chris is listening to this and thinking, he's probably been talking to me a couple of days before. I must have been a very strange conversation. Of course, he told me about it. And there was an article in Rolling Stone about it wasn't just the Zombies. I think there was Phony Animals and some other bands as well that were going around. And there was a big article in Rolling Stone about it. And there's part, I've got a little clipping, and I think it might be part of the packaging on this double album. There's a little bit of this clip about the manager saying that the lead singer of the Zombies had died tragically. And so they wanted to honor his life by touring the country playing the Zombies tunes. It's quite an interesting concept, and it encouraged me to write probably not a finished song, but an idea of a song.
Yeah.
Which you were just talking about. That's where it comes from. I quite like that, actually, listening to it again after 50 years. I thought, yeah, I think this is quite good, really.
Actually, a lot of that is quite good, I must say. And so the guy that was, the recently departed bass player in ZZ Top, he had performed in one of those Zombies bands.
That's right. I think two of the guys from ZZ Top had been in one of those Zombies bands. And, you know, listen, good luck to them. I want, you know, we weren't using the name. I want to see musicians work. You know, it's
right.
So little, you know, such a tough business being a musician, you know, and so many guys are not earning any money. So I just say good luck to them. They were out there playing and making some money.
So I want us to go out in a few moments on a few minutes to your tune, Caroline Goodbye, one of your compositions. But I wanted to ask you about one of your other songs, Though You Were Far Away. It's got sort of this, at least to me, this Nick Drake sensibility to it. Were you a fan of his at all, or familiar with Nick Drake at the time?
I'm a fan of his now, but I hadn't heard any of Nick Drake when One Year was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But a chap I was influenced by is someone who's playing on a couple of the demos that's on the second CD. And it's a singer-songwriter called Duncan Brown. And I do recommend to anyone who's listening that you check out Duncan Brown, because he's a fabulous guitarist. Sadly, he's passed away now, but fabulous guitarist, great. He wrote such great songs, and he was just a mate of mine. And he came along and played on a couple of the demos. Really lovely guitar. I think the demo of Though You Were Far Away, it's Duncan playing. And he wrote wonderful, wonderful songs.
So we're going to be checking on Duncan Brown. Also back in the 60s, Mike Dabo was the lead singer in Manfred Mann after Paul Jones left. He also contributed a song to the album, Mary, Won't You Warm My Bed. Now, how did you come to do that song?
I just knew Mike, and he played me the song, just sat down at the piano. I think it's a great way to first hear a song is when the writer sits down at a piano and plays it for you. And I thought it was a really good, good fun tune, you know. And I think we probably recorded that before we'd started doing the sort of string quartet tracks. I mean, 1 year, in a way, it's almost like a diary. It's this story of a year of mine, if you like. We started off with She Loves the Way They Love Her, which is basically Argent and myself, and ended up with Say You Don't Mind, which is the last track on the album, which is a Denny Lane song, and is we recorded with a 21-piece string orchestra. So we'd gone through quite a wide spectrum of music in that year, and we'd gone from a rock and roll band to a quite a large string orchestra. It was quite interesting. We just were trying, you know, we were just trying to find a way forward, and we tried quite a few different kinds of music. And I hope it all comes together and sounds of a piece when you listen to the CD, because there are quite different kinds of music on there. And I hope people will find that the variety enhances it rather than somewhat disturbs them when we go from rock and roll to Bartok, you know, and things like that. It's a little bit scary if you think about it, but I think it works okay when you listen to it.
Oh, I think it works just fine. I think it works excellently. And you mentioned the Say You Don't Mind, the final track on the album, the Denny Lane song. So he had released that as a single. That was just a favorite song of yours at the time, or why did you think that you wanted to do with it? Why did you want to interpret that yourself?
Well, when the Zombies were playing, so I'm going back to sort of 67, at one point we used to close our show on this great song written by Denny Lane, but we did it more as a rock and roll tune. Yeah. And in fact, when we were recording 1 year, we did try and play it as a rock and roll tune. Unfortunately, Argent were on tour, they weren't available. So it was sort of a session musician attempt at recording, and it didn't really work. Mm. And I'm really glad it didn't, because we called in this wonderful arranger, Chris Gunning, who came up with this such original, incredible arrangement for that song, and just took it to a completely different place. And surprisingly to me, that was released as a single, and it was quite a big hit in the UK. I'm not sure. I think it was a hit in some places in Europe, but I know it wasn't a hit in America. But it got to about 14 in the charts over here. So it was quite a big hit. And I didn't think that radio would play that song at all. It's so unusual, but they did. And it was quite a big hit. Led me to getting out on the road. I toured with a string quartet and a rock band on the first ELO tour, which not a lot of people know that, but on that first ELO tour, I was second on the bill to them. So I was touring with nine musicians and two crew, which was fairly cumbersome and extremely expensive, but it was good fun.
Hey, wow. Well, speaking about touring now, I believe you were supposed to have performed in the US, like in New York City and LA, but the pandemic travel restrictions, you know, put the kibosh on that. Do you have any updates about when shows might occur?
Well, there is fresh conversations about playing 1 year in its entirety in LA, possibly early next year, but nothing has been confirmed, but I hope we can do it. It's not an easy album to play live because, you know, as we were just saying, there are so many different kinds of music on this. So we're going to end up with sort of 20 musicians on stage. It's going to be a bit like a military maneuver, I think, playing the concert. But I hope we can do it early next year.
Unfortunately, well, I'm really hoping you can too, because I live here in Los Angeles, Colin. So, right here.
You must come along if we manage to do it.
Oh, I will certainly come along. So back in 2005, I was coming along with you guys, my band, The Woggles. We toured with you guys as part of a Little Stevens Underground Garage, a go-go tour. And certainly for us, that is one of the highlights of our musical adventures, traveling with you guys. And I know sometimes it's said, you know, you shouldn't meet your heroes. You'll be disappointed, But you guys are certainly the exception to that, because your patience and just dealing with all of our questions and your willingness to share your stories, and you guys, to a man, just some of the most charming people I have ever met. And I'm very grateful for that. And I just want to take a moment to say that again to you, because it is such a truth. There was a couple of some of those stories really great. And I was hoping I could get you to tell us again about this time, the story you had about, I think you were auditioning for the Zombies, and initially you had intended to be a guitar player, and you'd been in a fight or had some sort of accident, so you showed up with maybe your arm in a sling or a black eye. Can you remind us about that story?
Sure, absolutely. It's the first rehearsal of the Zombies. I mean, I came about, I'll tell you about my audition, first of all. My school was quite a strict school, and it was a boys only school, and you were known by your surname. No one mentioned your Christian name, and we had to sit in alphabetical order. So me being B, Blundstone, I sat next to a guy called Paul Arnold, A, B, and he had a friend, not at our school, it lived in the town where our school was, but there's no way I could have met this guy. And his friend was called Rod Argent. He went to another school, and he wanted to put a band together. And Paul was making a bass guitar in woodwork. He'd never played one, but he was making a bass guitar in woodwork. That got him into this band, fledgling band. And so Paul Arnold turned to me and he said, "You've got a guitar, haven't you?" And I said, yes. I was a little bit on my guard. Yeah. And he said, "Well, do you want to be in a band?" And that was my audition for the Zombies. That was it. So I turned up this Saturday morning. I only knew this one guy who sat next to me. He was late. So I was faced with all these people I didn't know. And unfortunately, in that week, I played quite a lot of rugby. And I had my nose broken on the Wednesday. And we first met on the Saturday morning. So I turned up with two black eyes and with tape all across my face to hold my, it was really badly broken. And it was sort of holding my nose together in the middle of my face. And I would say I probably looked a bit like a zombie when I turned up, thinking about it. So they didn't know me at all, but Rod's told me since that he was hoping this guy standing on the corner was not there for the first rehearsal of the band, because I looked a bit sort of rough and ready, because I was, I was all beaten up. Anyway, eventually everyone arrived and we were introduced to one another. It's very strange because I only knew this one guy who sat next to me. I didn't know the other guys at all. And I was going to be the rhythm guitarist. Rod was going to be the lead singer. The first thing we played was an old standard called Malaguena, and it's an instrumental. So Rod didn't actually, as he was the lead singer, he didn't do anything until we had a coffee break in the middle of the rehearsal. And he went over onto an old broken down old piano in the corner of the room that was only there by chance. And he played Nut Rocker by Bee Bumble and the Stingers, which is quite a little piece. It's a rock and roll take on a classical piece. And you have to be an accomplished keyboard player to play that. And I was stunned. I mean, we were fairly ordinary, I have to say, but he was in a different league to us. And I went over to him. I'd hardly spoken to him. And I said, "You really should play keyboards in this band." And he said, no, "This has got to be a rock and roll band. It's got to be three guitars, rock and roll, that's how it is." Anyway, I left it at that. And just at the end of the rehearsal, I was just putting my guitar into its case. And just to myself, to the corner of the room, I sang a little Ricky Nelson song. I think it was It's Late. And I was just singing it to myself. And Rod came over to me and he said, "Okay, if you'll be the lead singer, I'll play keyboards." And essentially, that then was the Zombies. That's how it happened. And so much is just chance. I didn't join the band to be a lead singer. Nothing further from my thoughts. I've always been very shy. And I thought I would stand at the back of the stage, shuffling around, looking at my shoes. And instead of that, I'm in the middle of the stage, right at the front. And you sort of have to go with it, really, don't you? That's how it all works out.
So you and Rod, you reformed the Zombies in the early 2000s. You've been active since. What's next on the plate for the Zombies?
Well, we've got four quite large tours next year. Two are in America. We start off with one of these music-themed cruises. This one, we haven't done... Oh, we have done it once before. It's called Flower Power. So I think it's mostly 60s and early 70s bands. I think the Hollies are doing it, and we're doing it. And then we do some American dates. Before that, we're doing a UK tour. Then we come back to the States in the summer. And then we do Scandinavia and Germany in the autumn. So it's quite a full year, providing the pandemic allows touring to get going again.
So you have been, I mean, this is great news. How exhausting, how much does touring take out of you? I mean, you obviously have a love of wanting to perform. Is it way more difficult now? Or do you still have the rhythm to it and something that you can't foresee stopping anytime soon?
Well, I mean, I've always been aware that there probably will come an end to the touring days. And, you know, maybe my voice will start to fade away. I've been lucky in that I've maintained my range because we play all the songs in their original keys. And I've just been fortunate. I mean, I do work at my voice as well. You may have heard me when we were touring. I do lots of singing exercises and things like that. But what I found is that you have to pace yourself as you get older. I can remember, you know, being 19 and being on the road and being up all night partying and then playing a show the next day and perhaps doing that for weeks on end. But, you know, we have to try to look after ourselves now and try to eat well, get plenty of sleep. Not many people in the band drink at all. We live a fairly sensible lifestyle, and doing that, we can, you know, we can enjoy ourselves and tour as often as we want. So it works out well, but you have to adjust your lifestyle as you get older. I think it's just common sense, really, Manfred. You know, I wanted to talk to you about the Woggles. Really, we were absolutely stunned when we played with you. The way you guys throw yourselves about, I have never seen anything like that in my life. Absolutely stunning, stunning. And you do it night after night. I watched you many, many nights, and I just couldn't believe it. That such a great band, you know, the Woggles. We love touring with you guys. We really do.
Well, thank you so much. It really would be great if we could do something with you guys again in the future. Right now, I need to ask you about Caroline Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And that was written about a breakup with a girlfriend, Caroline Monroe. Is that right? The actress, model?
It was indeed, yeah. Obviously, it's all a long time ago now. The thing is, Manfred, if I could have thought of another name to put in there, I would have. But the recording date was coming round, and I just couldn't think of another name. And I thought, well, no one other than my close friends are going to know that this is real. So I'll just go with it. I'll just put Caroline in because it fits. And a national newspaper over here, Caroline was becoming quite, well, very successful as a model, and she was breaking into film, and she was actually a Bond girl in one of the James Bond films. And so a national newspaper got hold of this story that I'd written a song about her. I think they were probably more interested in her than they were in me. And there's a sort of a full page article. It must've been a slow news day, I think. A full page article about this song in a national newspaper. And my secret was out. And I was kind of a little bit embarrassed about it, really. I never spoke to her about it. I hope she was okay about it. But if I could have found another name, I would have put it in there. But yes, it was just, you know, I was 21 or 22 years old, and I just wrote down how I was feeling. It's, again, one of my very early songs. And I think that when you first start writing, those are the kind of ideas you come up with. And it's heartfelt. You know, I hope people can see that, you know.
Oh, absolutely, it comes across. It's heartfelt. And now the added thing here to me, what is so extra cool about the songs, and I'm glad you did use her name and it was figured out who it was, because you mentioned the Bond film, and she was also, I guess, in these early these Hammer horror films, and yes. Then sometime in the early 70s she was like the slave girl, the female lead in The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, this Ray Harryhausen stop motion and stop animation classic, right? And I had seen, that's one of the films I saw when I was like 9 years old, and you know, my parents taking us to a movie that was that was a treat, right? That's not something we got to do all the time, and it's up there on the big screen, and you know, it's just a Harryhausen epic thing with centaurs and cyclopses and no fighting skeletons in that one, but there are whatever the Hindu god is with all the many arms, and there's all swords and all these different arms, and her, right? And and she was kind of like, at that time I was Batman, the 60s TV show was in syndication over here, and her like Julie Newmar is Catwoman. I, as a young boy, I would just kind of look at these women and just kind of like, didn't understand what was going on, except I really liked looking at them ladies, you know. That so that is the Caroline. Yeah. That's so cool. That is so cool. Have you guys remained in contact at all over the years?
No, we haven't really. We have met up a few times, but it was a long, long time ago. I didn't really know why not. When we've spoken, it's always been fine. You know, there's no animosity there. But I just think her sort of path in life took her in a different direction.
Right. Colin, let me thank you again for making this an extra, extra special Coolest Conversations.
Cheers, Manfred. Thank you so much. And I really must thank you for all the lovely things you said about the zombies as well. I was a little bit stunned when you said all those great things, but thank you so much. And do be assured that the zombies really love working with the Woggles too. And hopefully one day we can get on the road together again. It'll be a great adventure, I'm sure.
Oh, that would be lovely. Well, let's take a listen now to Caroline Goodbye off the 50th anniversary edition of Colin Blundstone's solo album, 1 Year, here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Saw your picture in the paper. My, you're looking pretty good. Looks like you're gonna make it in a big way. Well, I always knew you would. But I should have known better, yeah. And I should have seen sooner. No use pretending, I've known for a long time, your love is ending. Caroline, goodbye. Caroline, goodbye. Oh,
that was some of Caroline Goodbye from Colin Blundstone here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. It's off of Colin's debut solo album, 1 Year, which is celebrating its 50-year anniversary with a reissue on Sundays Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Colin for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. And next time, join me when I'll be chatting with country music star Elizabeth Cook. Her latest album, Aftermath, is produced by Butch Walker, and she's also a DJ on the Underground Garage's sister Sirius XM channel, Outlaw Country. That's Elizabeth Cook on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Give me a mic check for Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa, Florida.
Hello, check one Tampa, check two Tampa. I need some more on one.
Okay.
Casino, check, check. Hard Rock, Tampa, check, check. Seminole, Hard Rock.
Check it out for yourself at SeminoleHardRock.com. All right, guys, I'm rolling. Let's kick it.